There's a place in New York where you can walk through the actual front doors of the world's most famous recording studio, Abbey Road. Through those doors, past the Beatles, Pink Floyd, Radiohead, and countless other rock giants. Where can you find those doors? At the Hard Rock Cafe Times Square. The Abbey Road doors and thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock Cafes, Hard Rock Casinos, and Hard Rock Hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
Little Stephen's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
It's coolest conversations podcast time in Little Stephen's Underground Garage, presented by Hard Rock. I'm the Mighty Manfred. Thanks for listening, and please remember to follow and subscribe, rate, and review. My guest this week is 60s songwriting soul man Don Bryant. Active first as a singer by the late 60s and early 70s, he was working primarily as a songwriter, supplying material to high records artists like Otis Clay and Ann Peebles, and with the latter wrote I Can't Stand the Rain. In 2017, he launched a comeback with his album Don't Give Up on Love, and that comeback continues now with this year's follow-up, You Make Me Feel, like its predecessor, available from Fat Possum Records. It features our recent coolest song in the world, Your Love Is to Blame. Let's hear some of that now, followed by my interview with Don Bryant on your Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock in Little Stephen's Underground Garage.
You make me feel like a man wanna feel.
This is the Mighty Manfred, and what a special Coolest Conversations we have today, because joining me is singer and songwriter soul man Don Bryant. His singing career began in earnest in the 1960s, and then he put it on hold to concentrate on songwriting, especially for high record singer Ann Peebles. Their biggest hit together is 1973's I Can't Stand the Rain. Their subsequent marriage is celebrating 46 years, and this year also saw the release of his new album, You Make Me Feel, out on Fat Possum Records. Thanks for joining me, Don.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here with you.
So you are in Memphis, Tennessee, right?
Yes, I am. Uh-huh.
So have you and your family managed to stay healthy so far this year?
So far, we've done a pretty good job, I believe.
Oh, terrific. I'm very happy to hear that. You were born and raised in Memphis?
Yes, I was. Uh-huh. Sure was.
Pretty big family. How many kids were in your family?
7 boys and 3 girls.
Wow. Now, I read that you started singing at age 5. Was that in church?
Well, it was a lot of, you know, different things going on. We would always have a group get together under the street lights at night and just harmonize. And, you know, found a lot of different guys in the neighborhood that were singers. And, you know, that was like, you know, the beginning of my singing career. My father had a group, gospel group called the Four Stars of Harmony, and I used to, you know, we used to just sit around and listen to them rehearse, and I guess that's where I got mine from.
Okay, so when did you start singing secular music? When you were just getting together with the other guys singing out on the streets, you weren't doing gospel music, you were just singing popular tunes?
Yes, we were. I was in grade school, you know, about 8th grade or something like that, when I really started singing in the public. There were talent shows and different things going on at the time, you know. And
okay, so that's around 8th grade's around being, you know, about 13. Now, I'm a big Five Royales fan, and here at home I've got Think on my jukebox. And for listeners mm-hmm. who aren't as familiar with them, they were the first to do
This is dedicated to the one I love, that the Mamas and the Papas and the Shirelles would have hits with. And Think was a song right. James Brown later covered. Now, I found out when I was looking up information on you that the Five Royales recorded a song of yours, I Got to Know. And that came out in 1960. And you must have been all of 18. So
yes.
You're singing, start singing when you're 13. Now you've got this really popular R&B group doing one of your songs. How did that happen?
Well, if I recall right, they were recording at one of the studios or something. They needed some material, and I think it was, if I'm not mistaken, it might have been High Records, and they needed some material, and I presented that song to the best of my knowledge right now. That's kind of how I got started.
Wow, fantastic. Did you ever get to know Loman Pauling, their guitar player?
Not that close. You know, basically when we were in the studio recording, there was no other people but the people doing the session allowed in recording. So I got a chance to meet him. Mm-hmm. But any more than that, you know, I was just hanging around in the studio doing whatever I could in there, trying to come up with songs and what have you, you know. But I did get a chance to meet him.
Cool. And so was that the first of your songs to come out on a record or not?
I'm not sure. I believe it was, you know,
a long time, but granted. So that Five Royales record I got to know on the small Memphis label called Home of the Blues, and Home of the Blues also put out singles from Willie Mitchell, and he would later have Royal Studios and be involved with High Records. And I know you worked closely with Willie over the years. When did you actually meet Willie Mitchell?
That's kind of hard for me to really, you know, go back on that right now.
Sure.
But it was doing some of the things that it was a group.
Mm-hmm.
I had a group called the Four Kings, I believe that was. And most of the bands around the city had groups singing with them.
Uh-huh.
And Willie had a show that he was doing in the city too, and he had a group, and something happened to the group, and the group broke up or what have you, and he needed, you know, a group to sing with the band and in the clubs and doing that he was playing, and some of the guys in the studio, I mean, in the neighborhood, you know, we had gotten together on a group, and we auditioned for him, and he took us in and used us as his group. Each band had a group.
Uh-huh.
It was about four bands playing in the city at different clubs, and each one had a group, and when he left that group, he needed another one, and we got the chance, and that's kind of how I got really started singing with Willie.
Oh, fantastic. So by 1965, you're on High Records, and Willie's involved with that. Single of yours, Don't Turn Your Back on Me, you re-recorded that for the new album. Is Don't Turn Your Back on Me your first single on High Records?
It's close to it. You know, I at this point, you know, I don't know exactly what it was, but it was close to it. I think that was
Why did you decide to re-record that song for the new album?
I don't know. That song meant a lot to me. As being one of my, you know, first songs or what have you, and it just stuck with me. You know, matter of fact, I walk around singing it, you know, today. You know, because it brought back a lot of memories and what have you. And I don't know, when we started recording, that song stuck in my head, and I talked with Scott about recording it, and hey, we got it in. I was happy to get that in because that was one of my favorite songs.
Great. Well, I want us to talk some more specifically about the new album. Now, this is, I guess, the second one that you've had produced by Scott Bomar, the first being Don't Give Up on Love. That was just back in 2017, a couple years ago. And you hadn't had a solo album of, you know, secular music since like 1969, and then the comeback in 2017. Why did you decide to record that first album with Scott, and how was drummer Howard Grimes involved?
Well, I tell you this, Scott, a band playing at one of the clubs in Memphis, and something happened to his vocalist. Percy Wiggins was his vocalist, and something happened, and he was not able to, you know, do the shows. I had done some commercials and different things down there with Scott, you know, and he needed a singer. And I don't know if he got in touch with me or I found out that, he got in touch with me and asked me, would I be available to, you know, to do some sets with him at the club he was playing in, and I was glad to do it. You know, and that was the beginning to getting involved back into, you know, singing in the clubs, because I don't think I was doing anything in the clubs then. Also, I got with him and you know, we got some things set up and worked out pretty good. And before you know it, he wanted to check with me and see what I was interested in, you know, doing some recordings. And I was, you know, once I got back into that singing in the club, you know, I was interested in doing some recording, and that's how we got back together. You know, we knew each other. You know, we hadn't done any shows or anything together, as far as I can remember. But we knew each other, and once he asked me if I would be interested in doing some recordings, hey, I said, yes, let's go for it.
All right.
That's how we got started.
Well, I heard the new album, You Make Me Feel, being described as your love letter to Anne. Is that so?
Well, I tell you what, she did make me feel.
All right.
She did. When she came to Memphis and hooked up with Willie Mitchell over there, I was there. And I was like basically the number one artist with Willie Mitchell's band. Mm-hmm. You know, at the time, but she came in with that strong voice, and I guess Willie heard it. He had the ear, and he heard it, and I guess he got with her, and you know, got a contract, and they went to work. And hey, that thing was getting to know her and see what she could do and what have you, you know. It was something kind of different for me, because at the time I was really doing it, but she stepped in and just took over that with that voice she had and what have. She just took over that. She needed material, and I love and enjoy writing. And once she was signed up and getting ready to go for her, I tried to start bringing material in. You know, I still had my little records going or whatever, but she just shot up, man. You know. Maybe it was just love at first sight.
Well, let me ask you, what does she think of the new album? What does she think of the love letter?
Oh, she loves it, man. She loves it.
Does she offer any constructive criticism? Like, you said, hey, baby, listen to this. What do you think of this? And she says, well, you sound okay there, but you could have hit that note better. Is it anything like that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You know. When I'm writing the song, and generally I would sing it to her to get her opinion, you know. And she would give me a couple of little things that she used to do herself, you know, and I'd try them, you know, to see how they would work out. But, we work together like that all the time.
Oh, fantastic. So when and where did you record the new album?
With Scott.
Right. I know with Scott, but where at? Does he have a studio in Memphis?
Yes. Uh-huh.
And did you record that like over the course of last year, or how long did it take to make the album?
It didn't take very long. Once I realized that we had a session coming up, you know, that's when I kind of went to work writing material with whoever had ideas. Scott had some ideas, and he would help me through some things and ideas that I had, you know, to get prepared to do the recording. I think they all came out pretty good. You know, I went back and picked up some of the old things that I liked, I think it was 99 pounds or something like that.
Let's speak a little bit more about Scott, because you mentioned how you guys met, and to put things in a better context, Scott Beaumar, he was a bass player in a Memphis instrumental band called Impala back in the 1990s. That's when I had first met him. He's since then gone to do a lot of producing locally, working with the Bokees. He also scored that Eddie Murphy movie about Dolomite from last year, Dolomite Is My Name. What is it like working with him? Is he like a very hands-on or hands-off producer in the studio?
Well, at times, when I present material and what have you, for the sessions that were going on, he would give me, little ideas of how maybe to change, a couple of lines or what have you, But we work together. Basically, it came out pretty good as far as I'm concerned,
Oh, it's great. It's my favorite record of the year, I have to say.
So, we were working together. That was the thing. We were working together.
So on that 2017 album, he and you wrote some songs together. And on the new album, you've written some songs together, including our coolest song in the world this week, Your Love Is to Blame. Can you tell me about how that song came together?
Well, I guess it's just a way I approach songs and ideas or what have you, A lot of the things with me, if I look at them one way, that's already been there. I try to look at the idea and kind of reverse it around and move it around and make it. You might be listening to something that's saying, about love, we're not gonna make it or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I would try to come up with the same idea, but kind of turn it around and give a new story to it.
Right. Well, I mentioned drummer Howard Grimes. He's on the recording. So is Archie Hubby Turner on keys. Both those guys were High Records session men. Do you have any good stories about Hubby or Howard from back in the day?
Well, nothing I could think of right now. It was just so much going on,
Right.
Basically, when the group came in to record, it wasn't very many in the sessions, I would probably be in one of the rooms writing or what have you, and not involved in the recording session. But we all got along well. Sometimes they would bring ideas to me, and it was a good working situation as far as writing is concerned, too.
Well, you mentioned doing some of your older songs that you had done back in the 60s or early 70s, re-recording them for the new album. And one that you had given to Anne to do was 99 Pounds, your version on the new album. Was she all of 99 pounds back then?
Yes, she was. That's where I got the idea of the song from. She certainly was. And I don't know, some things like that would always trigger off an idea to write a song, the idea of being 99 pounds and what have you, I don't know, things just got triggered off at the spur of the moment. Things get triggered off, and my thing would be, hey, try to write a song and present it. I wanted to present it to her because it was really telling, her thing.
So do you recall what her reaction was to when you said, hey, I've got this song for 99 pounds, what do you think of it?
I think she loved it, Willie did, Willie Mitchell did, and I think she really did too, because, the way she got on it and sang it, I think she really liked it.
So on You Make Me Feel, you do a song of yours that Otis Clay was the first to release, that I Die a Little Each Day. Man, that is such a tearjerker. Is that song from any one experience, or how did you come up with that? Do you recall?
No, I don't think it was from any experience. I get my ideas in so many different ways. I look at situations, and in my mind and my head, I would kind of turn that situation around another way, but talking about the same thing. And that was my challenge. I died literally today, it was a situation where when people lose each other, they go into one of those situations. They go into one of the moves, man, It's just like dying. When you're losing that one you love, in a way,
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I was going to say, I'm going to call it another trip to the Well of Tears on the album is I'll Go Crazy, which is a song you did back in the 60s. I'm interested whether you recall or not anything about the songwriters, Mary and Johnny Friesen.
Yes, I remember both of them. Both of them, they were both singers. And that was, you know, there was always three or four people hanging around the studio to write songs, even though they might not be recording or singing, to write songs. And I would kind of mingle with them and get together with them, and some of them come with the idea, and we all get together and, you know, and try to finish it up. That, you know, that was the way it worked out at High. I presented it to Willie, and if he liked it, hey, we good.
So why did you decide to do that one for the new album? Was there any specific reason you decided to go back to it?
Well, they were some of my favorite songs.
Yeah.
You know, Otis recorded. Otis Clay recorded it.
And
we were overseas doing the show over there, and he was there. And I had the opportunity to request it by his manager to sing that song. And I sing that song, you know, at the thing they had for, you know, his passion. He did such a great job on it himself too.
Yeah,
you know, I was really blessed to be able to do that, and I was really happy about it.
Were you guys close then?
Not really. It was this idea when, you know, when artists came in like to the studio and needed material, and I knew they were coming. Willie would tell, let us know when I was coming.
Yeah.
You know, I would just get together writing songs. You know, if I knew who the artist was and I knew how he sounded and his style of music or her style of music or whatever, I would be writing songs, you know, for them to record when they came in. And that was just a song. I don't know. It was a part of me. It was a part of, you know, other people that I knew or what have you. You know, I get that feeling, and you know, it just seems like they start coming. The lyrics just start coming.
You know, a real fun, upbeat number on the new album is Cracked Up Over You, a song you wrote. And I've come across versions by, like, Lee Rogers and Danny White. Do you remember who the first one to do it was?
No, I sure don't. That was back a while. I don't remember who it was, but I know it was, hey, it was a popular song.
I'm not sure
whether I did it or not. But I know artists would come in, and generally they, you know, you present those songs to them, and, you know, they would pick them up. And that just really made me more interested in writing.
Mm-hmm.
And getting deep off into that, because there was a lot of people coming in needed material.
Right.
And at that time, I felt that, hey, this would be a great spot for me to get off into writing these songs. And I was just, you know, when I came in, you can say when I came into work, you know, it was sitting down by myself or with whoever was in the studio interested in writing, you know, and just write some songs. If I knew an artist come in, I'd make sure I have at least one or two songs prepared for.
Right.
I enjoyed doing it, man. I enjoyed doing it. And it boosted me to be able to present it to somebody, and they liked it too. So I guess that's what got me deeper into writing songs.
I love how you end the new album with a gospel number, Walk All Over God's Heaven. Why that specific gospel number and not a different one? How did that one speak to you?
I don't know. That was one of my favorite songs that, you know, I used to just walk around singing, you know. I don't know. I just like that song, you know. It moved me, you know. And it was one of my favorite songs that I used to just harmonize all the time. And, you know, when the recording come in, you know, I just talked with Scott to see if we could do, you know, maybe put that song in the album.
Mm-hmm.
And it was no problem. It came off good, I feel.
Yeah, I do too. I'm very happy you did it. So you mentioned Scott arranging it or helping you arrange it. Years ago, Scott took me to Al Green's church there in Memphis. Is it still active? It was like the Full Gospel Tabernacle, I think that's what they called it. Does Al Green still have his church in Memphis?
I'm really not sure whether he do or not. Yeah. I haven't seen or heard from him. So I couldn't really say, you know.
Had you ever been there to his church?
No, I never did get a chance to get to his church.
Well, if it's still there, I encourage you, because it was great. I mean, you know, obviously he's a great singer, and there was a lot of singing going on.
Oh, yeah.
And a really good time. Well, we can only play one other song off the album right now. And by the way, it's very hard to only play one other song right now, because there's so many good ones singing. Like, we wouldn't be talking about all these songs if I didn't think they were phenomenal. But I've settled on another one that you wrote with Scott called Your Love Is Too Late. What can you tell me about that one?
Well, now, that was just a song that came up with the idea, you know, I came up with the idea that, I can't say who it was, but, you know, it was just talking to somebody, and basically the songs would be, you know, I love you and I want you to be this and be that, and you know, but I would at times try to kind of reverse the idea of a song and see if I could come up with something, you know, similar to it, but it would be kind of in reverse of, you know, what most of the songs are saying, I love you and I want you and that. You know, and different things like that. But I don't know, that idea just hit me. And when it hit me, you know, I decided I'd try to write a song on it. And thankfully, it came out the way it did.
Oh, I am too. Have you heard about Nick Waterhouse?
No, I'm not familiar with him.
All right. Well, he's a guy about 10 years younger than Scott. And he makes albums now, and they're very rooted in 60s and even 50s R&B sounds, but at the same time, or contemporary, like your own records. And this tune, Your Love Is Too Late, definitely along the lines of something he would do. So you guys should pitch it to him. You know, he needs, this Nick Waterhouse needs to get on the Don Bryant train.
All right. That sounds good.
All right, I'm going to get on Sky. We'll work on that. Don, thank you so much for talking with me today on our Coolest Conversations.
Hey, believe me, I enjoyed being on with you, man. Thank you.
All right. Well, we're going to leave now with another track off You Make Me Feel. Here's Don Bryant doing Your Love Is Too Late in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
You out of my mind. The day you left, I always knew you would be back. As time went on, my love for you left, and the pain in my heart went away. But before you say you're sorry, there is something that I've got to say.
Your Love Is Too Late. That's Don Bryant here in Little Steven's Underground Garage. Track is off his latest album, You Make Me Feel, and that's available from Fat Possum Records. This is the Mighty Manfred, and thanks again to Don for speaking with me on our Coolest Conversations. And thanks to Olivia Callahan for producing our podcast. Be sure and join me next week when I'll catch up with famed guitarist Nils Lofgren. For many years, he's played alongside Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band. Prior to that, he was in Crazy Horse and backed Neil Young. And of course, he's pursued his own projects throughout his career. His latest release is a double live CD called Weathered, and we'll talk all about it on our next Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock, here in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
There's a place in New York where you can walk through the actual front doors of the world's most famous recording studio, Abbey Road. Through those doors, past the Beatles, Pink Floyd, Radiohead, and countless other rock giants. Where can you find those doors? At the Hard Rock Cafe Times Square. The Abbey Road doors and thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock Cafes, Hard Rock Casinos, and Hard Rock Hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.